Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the adjective head.
I feel like you've done that one before.
I did too, but I panicked.
Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobbies, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. But not this time. This time we're talking about something.
Like most times.
Most of the time. We'll tell you when we're going to play some games. It's usually some sort of event. I don't know. I've thought about changing that part of the intro before, but it is also still true. Sometimes we do play.
We really don't play enough. Leela, or I don't know. Whatever. I tried to shoehorn it into a reference. It didn't work. Okay, so what we're talking about today. The functions, or the function of descriptions in tabletop RPGs.
This should be fun. Last episode was kind of clinical, almost. Like, it was, there was class, you know.
It was like a class.
Yeah. And this one actually is sort of going to be too, but but it's, I think it's more fun, less work, the sort of
more
stuff we're
fun,
talking about
less work
today.
Put
this,
that on
this
a
episode,
can.
Yeah. More fun, less work.
Okay, so we're talking about descriptions and their function.
Yeah.
First, we're talking about sinking the drift using descriptions.
If you're unfamiliar with that term, we've got an episode all about that. But also, you got to watch Pacific Rim first. So if you haven't seen Pacific Rim,
go see Pacific Rim.
Turn this episode off. Go watch Pacific Rim. Then go listen to Sinking the
Drift. Go look at some pictures of Pacific Rim 2. Don't watch.
Yeah, don't watch.
But just
that
look
one
at the pictures.
But there's a few more monsters and like cool robots and stuff.
And
don't watch
Haley
the second
Spang
one. Yeah.
But look at pictures, then listen to our
Sinking
the
Drift episode. And then you'll know what we're talking about.
Then come back to this episode.
Yep.
Perfect. No notes. End of episode.
Print it. Cut it. Print it.
Okay. Then we're talking about decision making and how descriptions come into decision making.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll talk about the vague to detailed spectrum of descriptions and using them as a storytelling device.
Yeah. And just real quick high level, descriptions. We're talking about when the game master describes the scene or a character or a thing in a role-playing session. And also sometimes we're going to be talking about throwing that to the players, allowing the players to describe something. Mostly, though, the game master is the one who describes the room and says what's in there and then asks the players what they do. So we're talking about the function of that in the role-playing experience.
Yeah. So, sinking the drift.
Mm-hmm.
Descriptions are a way to sink the drifts. There's a lot of external tools and props, like, you know, battle maps or
miniatures, plastic terrain. There's all this 3D printed stuff now, so you can invest in making your table look like just the space that you're describing, and you can offload some of your game master descripty stuff onto props and terrain and minis, but also you could do zero of that. You could play completely Theater of the Mind.
And if you're a listener, a faithful listener of this show, you know that we like the idea of less extra shit that you have to buy and like set up.
Yeah.
It's like we like the simple, slick, you know, so like Theater of the Mind when possible, rather than, you know, creating a $3,000 role-playing, you know, table.
And I like miniatures a lot, but I don't bring very many miniature, like paper minis or just like colored meeples is usually all you need. And then just like a grid.
Yeah.
If you have a grid for just like space and distance, you can do most of what you need to do with description. And also if you exercise that muscle, you can just do better even if you do have a lot of terrain and props and stuff, and if that is the way that you like to run it and the way your players like to engage with it, but you're still gonna have to describe some stuff.
You still will. Having a physical having a physical thing helps with like spatial awareness,
yeah,
right? But you still will have to describe stuff. And so that is how you sink the drift up, right? Is because the technology just is not there to like plug in the Game Master's brain to the projector and be like, here's the room that you're in.
Yeah.
The Game Master will have to describe like how big is the room, how many doors are in the room, what does it smell like?
Yeah. Not just the physical space, but the, and that's the thing that you can't convey, no matter how good your miniatures are. Your tabletop terrain, or if you have like a, you know, a digital battle map with tokens on the computer screen, whatever, that stuff can't convey things like sound and smell. Well, yeah. You could do some sound. You could play some ambient sound.
And I guess you could have some smells.
That's true. You could have like a combined gas canister that released different stinks based on vibes and environments. I'm sure that technology...
That technology exists.
They have 4D movies.
Yeah.
I didn't see Furiosa in 4D, but apparently the piss splashes right on you.
Nasty. Okay, we're getting off topic. So, sinking the drift is... Or descriptions are a way to sink the drift, right? The Game Master describes stuff. The players can describe stuff, too, like how they look, how they feel about stuff, right? To help the shared experience be in sync.
Because, yeah, regardless of what, you know, physical props or digital... You know, you're doing this together in like a shared imaginative space,
right? So I think I'm gonna do a little example.
Play along.
It's a like a meditative exercise that's very common. I personally have not run one of these before, so a little nervous.
So forgive him his.
But I'll try to make it so we can reference it back to make our point. Okay, so everybody. Take a deep breath. In. Out. Close your eyes. Keep breathing deep as you close your eyes. Picture yourself on a beach. There's a light surf crashing against the sand. Off in the distance, there is your cottage. A thin plume of smoke comes out from the cottage as you walk down the beach. You hear some birds off in the distance. Caw, caw. On the beach, in the other direction from your cottage, there is a horse galloping through the surf towards you. It's your horse. And as it comes closer, galloping, open your eyes and tell me what color the horse was. Chances are, if you're in a room full of people, not everybody pictures the same color horse. I bet there's some black horses out there. I bet there's some Palomino horses out there. Point is, I didn't tell you what color the horse was, but you pictured...
You pictured a
horse, right? Maybe it was a nice chestnut.
I pictured Tina's imaginary horse from Bob's Burgers. Shiny black Jericho.
Shiny black Jericho?
Mm-hmm.
Voiced by Paul Rudd or not voiced?
Voiced, yeah, because he says, I'm wild. also, the beach. Probably a different beach.
Yeah.
Probably
was it rocky?
Yeah.
I said there was sand, but...
You did say
was
sand.
Was it all sand? Yeah. Was it white sand? Was it black sand?
Mm-hmm.
What was your cottage? Was it brick? Was it wood?
Was it, you know, was it a little, like, resort beach thing? Or was it, you know, it just, like... There was a lot of clarity, a very, like, clear scene set up, but also everyone imagined different elements of that. And the horse part is the thing we're going to keep coming
How
back
far
to.
Away was your horse when you saw them, right? When I told you there was a horse, I said it was down the beach.
So when we talk about sinking the drift and the function of the descriptions that the Game Master gives his party... As he's running the game, as they are running the game, whoever they are, the discrepancies in what different people might imagine. That's what we're talking about when we talk about sinking the drift. Your descriptions gotta do all they can do to alleviate those discrepancies. That is the point of, like, sinking the drift. And sometimes it doesn't matter, right? Like, if it's not functional, then a slightly different visualization of this beach scene is okay. But sometimes it is important that everyone is imagining the same thing in the same way so that everyone interacts with it the same way, because it's an interact with a bull part of the story.
Right.
So an, like, interactive part of the story. That was a, I don't know why I made up a new word.
Right. Because your players are going to be interacting with it.
Yeah.
Right. The game master and the players have to be on maybe not exactly the same page, but, like, related pages where, like, you know, the players don't say something totally out of pocket, and then you got to scratch your head and be like, how do I fit that into this story? Right? Because the players can't see into your brain, but they do have to make decisions.
Yeah.
So the clarity of description can be critical in that, right? It comes up all the time, and it's just one of those things that I don't think, like, I just, it's probably never going to get, we're going to get rid of it, of like, oh, I was picturing something different. Mm-hmm. I would have made a different choice if I had known that. Sometimes it's like, okay, we'll just roll with that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like, okay, let's go back, you know, describe what you would do if you had known that.
Yeah.
That cliff was slippery and wet.
Right. I was like, probably never going to get to it. I would advocate for not getting to that point, or at least, like, if that technology ever does exist, to not bring it into this, because there's a difference between, like, an MMO or, you know, like, playing Skyrim, and everyone who plays Skyrim has been to the same places, right?
Yeah.
There's a difference between that and the, like, shared imaginative folk experience of, you know, D&D, pen and paper role-playing stuff. I think there's, like, beauty and value in this being an imaginative thing. A shared imagination thing that probably does have some discrepancies.
Yeah.
And probably always will, but the things that are important, the things that are interactive, everyone's got to be on the same page with them. And that does come from your clarity of description.
Right, yeah. And, like, depending on the situation, like, in combat, it's very important, because those little descriptions can have extreme ramifications. Mm-hmm. So, like, oh, you're, you know, in the forest and you're getting ambushed by arrows.
Yeah.
Right? Not describing places to, like, hide or seek cover. Mm-hmm. Right? Your players might be like, okay, well, there's no cover around, so I rush at them.
Yeah.
Right? Versus, oh, well, I duck behind a tree.
Right.
And then it's like, well,
direction is it coming from?
Right.
And you say, okay, like, I run over here and duck behind a tree. And you're like, that's actually...
That's where the guy is.
That's where the arrows are coming from. Well, you know, my decision as a player would have been different if I'd understood that. If our drifts had been synced and we were imagining things in the same orientation, I would have made a different decision. And so it's, and then your player rightly would be like, well, it's unfair. Can I walk that back? Can I mulligan this action?
Yeah.
Because that is not what I would have done had I known.
Right. And, like, for example, the horse example, right? Mm-hmm. So I did, that's the description that we're going off. The player says, will I mount my horse and ride off? And then the game master's like, okay, well, give me a riding roll because you didn't put on a bridle and a saddle.
Right.
And you're like, well, like, I had pictured a bridle and a saddle.
I imagined my horse was ready to go.
You said it was my horse.
Yeah. And when you said it was my horse, I imagined that this morning I got him ready. And, you know, he was over there for a second while I, like, got my pack.
Yeah.
And I was like, but that's not what I was saying. That's not what I thought.
Mm-hmm. So... we just wanted to point that out because we think it is important to recognize that descriptions are a way to sync up. And when they are desynced, it's not the end of the world, because it will happen eventually. Mm-hmm. And that's just a natural thing in role playing. So going from, like, how you deal with it is the important thing, right? Like, do you say, okay, oh, I didn't know that you had already saddled your horse. Okay, no roll. Mm-hmm. Right. Or you were like, well, you got to tell me next time and kind of be an asshole
and then
about
make
it.
Make them roll still. And then they're imagining something that is asynchronous with what you're imagining. You got to. Yeah. So I would say like the actionable thing is when that comes up, you got to, you know, you got to, you can't move forward with one or the other of you being on a different page still. You got to get on the same page.
I think the thing to put on the board
is,
as a game master, never punish a desync in description.
Slight desync in the drift. I imagined this. Like, okay, sorry. Mm. You're still the arbiter of that because you're the game master, right? You are playing the world. You are in charge of like ruling it consistently and making it appear and feel like something believable.
And that's not to say like let your players revise because they're like, oh, I wasn't imagining it like that. Mm-hmm. Like, different example, like there's a bridge your players have to cross. Mm-hmm. As the game master, you describe it as a rickety, rotted old rope bridge. Mm-hmm. And the players are like, yeah, we walk across it with no safety lines or not one at a time, just everybody walks on it. And you're like, okay, you sure?
You sure?
Okay. Great.
Now give me your rolls to not fall.
And they're like, I thought it was a stone bridge. It's like, I barely clearly said it was old rotted wood.
But if they're like, and they're wrong because that's not what you said, but maybe you didn't, maybe they missed it, whatever. Like, the point is, it's unfair to punish them for describing action based on an incorrect understanding of.
And like, goes back to the kind of like role-playing Bushido. It's like, you know, an honest mistake is an honest mistake, right? Maybe they got, you know, an important text or were looking to see if that text was important while you were describing something. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a wildly different thing to describe this bridge that looks possibly hazardous, unsafe, and you've put it there as like, you could go this way, but what I'm really telling you is you might have to like climb down and out the other side. Mm-hmm. There's a world of difference between like, oh, I just walk forward. Oh, sorry, I misunderstood your description or I wasn't listening. There's a world of difference between that and, okay, I do understand. My character brazenly walks across anyway because
that's what my character.
That's their attitude about this. Yeah. You know, they're trying to show off, or they're just not scared of this, or they're confident in their ability to pass a save. Mm-hmm. That situation, you let it play, and you assess the appropriate like role or penalty or hazard or whatever, because they've chosen to enter into that, probably because it's exciting and dramatic and fun,
right?
That you do want to go forward with.
Right. Which is why descriptions are important.
And that's why it's fair to assess a penalty in that situation. Yeah. Or
To call for a roll, maybe. Right? Because, that's a nice dramatic scene and some good role-playing. It's like, my character's not afraid. Mm-hmm. Right? That decision can't be made without the description of the bridge being like, it's a dangerous bridge to cross. Right? And then you're like, well, I have a moment of role-playing where my character's not afraid. Mm-hmm. Boom. Drama. Perfect. Yo. Yeah. I got really energetic at that end and then realized that we had to segue it to vague to detailed, and I stumbled there. About decision making?
Nothing that's not going to come up again later or that we'll be able to call back to. I think that is the point. Clarity of description is critical to decision-making in some situations. And so if it is critical to decision-making, you got to make sure that you are clear in your description and that, all the players are on board before you then, pass the ball to them and say, so what do you guys do?
Yeah. Okay. So you're describing something, right? How detailed do you have to be? Right, we just said if it's like an important part of the decision-making process, it should probably be pretty detailed. Mm-hmm. If it's not, or maybe it's a lead-up to something, right? you can start vague, right? Mm-hmm. Fill in the details later.
You're traveling along the road at night, and then, like, up on the hill in the moonlight, you see the vampire's castle.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to describe the vampire's castle any more detailed than that, because that's probably where they're going. And
or it's enough for them to be like, yeah, we don't want to go there.
Yeah, or it's enough for that. And then also, what's probably going to happen first is, like, here's some zombies on the road or something. You know, some of the vampire's undead thralls. And now you're in an encounter here where the castle, details about the castle
don't matter. Yeah.
You're dealing with this. But once that's resolved, and, you know, say they decide to go further, that's when you need to be able to...
come up with some details.
Yeah, you need to up the resolution on this castle, because, like, are they going to go in the front gate? What does the front gate look like?
Is there
like?
A moat?
Yeah, is it guarded? Is there a moat? Is the drawbridge up or down? Does it look like we could climb around? Does it look like we could scale the walls? Or is there maybe, like, a drainage into the moat that we could sneak into? Those sort of things. And a spatial sort of, like, representation of those things start to become more critical the closer they get to the thing. So yeah, like, as a thing becomes more important in the scene, you got to up the resolution on your description. But also, you can start with very low resolution further away when it's a thing that just, like, is over there and they might not even go to.
Yeah, right. You know, start with what the players need to know and kind of work in from that. Right, like going back to the seaside horse example, right? The horse is galloping towards you. Its color doesn't matter. Maybe there's something behind it. Maybe there are creepy crawlies crawling up out of the surf.
Maybe the important thing is not, like, what this horse looks like, but why it's running.
Right, and I didn't tell you that at first because it's like, oh, this is a serene picture. My horse, my horse has come into me. Oh, as it gets closer, it looks kind of scared. Uh-oh.
This scene's about to break bad, and it's not like, it's not like, oh, my horse. It's like, hey, what's my horse doing? Oh, there's a thing over there.
Right? And so, like, as a game master, you don't have to start with the most detailed thing of, like, yeah, there are, like, fish monsters crawling up out of the surf, and that's why your horse is running. And here's what they look like, and this one has a sword, and this one has a club. And,
yeah.
Right? That's just too much right away.
Yeah.
Start with... Oh, it's I didn't even describe the weather, right? And, you know, that's something that, is it important? If it's not, probably just let it go.
Sometimes players in this, like, vague to detail thing, you said something that just made me think of something. This one has a sword, this one has a club. A lot of times that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because a monster stat block will just have a damage dice that they roll. Right, and maybe the picture shows a goblin with a sword, but maybe some of them have spears or bows or whatever. Sometimes that stuff doesn't matter until the players
make it matter.
Make it matter until the players ask about it. Maybe you got a character who, like, broke his shield last session. Like, well, does any of them have a shield? I'd like to kill that one because then I could take their shield.
Right.
Because that's a thing that I'm going for. And then maybe you didn't know that ahead of time. And you weren't planning on upping the resolution on this ambushing group of goblins that high until they asked for it. And then you're like, okay, I got six goblins. I got to describe all six of them in a little bit more detail as far as, like, their equipment and weaponry because a player is specifically asking about that. But sometimes players not asking about that, doesn't care about that. Group of players is okay just knowing that, like, it's six goblins and we can fight them. And maybe you describe their weapons when they attack or defend or do damage to the players. Maybe you don't. You're just like, yeah, you get hit for a little bit of damage. And you don't need to describe any more than that. But players might ask for something that does require you to then up the resolution on your description.
Right. And, like, it can be... And I guess this is advice for the players, right? Holding to that code. Like, don't immediately go to, like, the game master's trying to get me. Like, as more details become clear, as the resolution gets, you know, improved, increased, be like, oh, well, like, I totally would have done something different if I knew that goblin had a bow.
Right.
And it's like, maybe, but, like, if it's not, like, really life or death, like, oh, they, like, I'm just going to stand out in the open and, like, oh, goblin shoots you and, like, critical hit, you're dead. You're like, well, if I had known that goblin had a bow, I wouldn't have stood out in the open.
Yeah. Like, I shouldn't have to tell you what weaponry they're carrying for you to know that it's a dumb idea to, like,
right,
stand out in the open and dare them.
Yeah, and, like, that just goes to the, you know, player side of, like, yeah, if you have an idea and want to make an informed decision, ask questions. Mm-hmm. Just like, do any of them have bows? And, like, maybe it's the, so, like, I use that as kind of a ridiculous example, but, like, if it was a, if the game system's more, like, you know, nitty gritty, like, you know, a critical hit in either direction is a kill. And, like, you know, it's really mean. It's a mean system. You know, I think it is appropriate to slow it down and bring that level of detail, like, especially in combat, right? If it's like one hit can put you down.
Yeah.
Right. It is important to know which ones have bows, which ones have ranged weapons. So, yeah, kind of just stick to that code of, like...
There are things that, like, based on what game system you're playing, how tactical it is, how lethal the math of the game system is, and things like that matter. But if you're, you know, if you're playing a game system where specific things about, like, weaponry and equipment do really matter like that, you're probably going to be including stuff like that in your descriptions. And, or at least you should be.
Right, and so, like, I think... In the vague to detailed spectrum of descriptions that we're talking about here, I think the thing that goes on the board is add what needs to be there. And what that is going to be different for every situation, every game system.
Yeah.
And it's just going to, it's going to take some feeling out and some, like, you know.
And, but that feeling out is important because you don't waste time describing things that don't matter. Yeah. But when players are like, you know, can I hide behind this? Yes, you can. And then clarify what the, you know, what the nature of that cover is, or if they, like, if there are windows on this, on this wall. If there are no windows, they might make a different decision based on, and you might not have thought about whether or not there are windows in this building. Are they going to hide inside and peek out, or are they going to, you know, avoid it and just treat the whole thing as just like a block of terrain to hide behind?
Yeah.
They might not go inside it if there's no reason to go inside of it, but if they're like, hmm, what if I go inside of it? Then you might have to think of some stuff that you hadn't
initially planned for.
And so just, you know, be, do that in good faith.
Yeah.
I guess. And then once you say a thing, you got to stick with it. So, consider before you add to this description, is this something I'm willing to continue to roll with for the duration of this encounter or whatever?
Yeah, it takes some practice and, like, yeah, hearing to the code, because there is merit in, like, you know, being able to surprise your players and being like, oh, nobody watched the flank and, like, a sneaky goblin was coming up and, like, I didn't draw attention to it as the game master because I wanted it to be surprising.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, you know, there's that balance there of, like, right, you know, what is,
but that's a fair, gotcha, that's a fair thing versus, like, fair, you know, oh, someone broke in through this window. You thought you were hiding in this house and someone broke in through the window. You're like, I didn't know there were windows there. You know, I would have been looking out with, you know, the difference between those two things.
Yeah.
Is it fair for someone to sneak around you? Yes, probably. But if they use an avenue to do that, if you narrate that your enemies use an avenue to do that that the players didn't know existed, that's an issue with description, with them not being able to clearly visualize the space, and it would have informed their decision, calling back to the first one.
Right, you know? Like, yeah. I mean, I don't think I was going to say something about, like, a hidden closet. They're looking for, like, the killer, right, in the house. And, like, he was in the closet. Nobody checked. It's like, well, if you didn't say there was a closet there, of course nobody checked it.
Right. I wouldn't have checked it. Yeah. If you say, like, we searched the house, then you've got to give it to them there.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not going to bother to describe everything in every room, because that would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you can get away with that. You cannot describe everything if you put a detailed like map in front of them.
Right.
And it's clear.
The visuals.
If you present a clear visual and you're like, you're in this space, and you're like, okay, we fan out and search. If we're just doing theater of the mind, then you search, and I describe what you search, and I describe what you find. And if there's something to find, you probably find it. Mm-hmm. Unless it's behind a role because it's optional and difficult.
Yeah.
Other side of that, I don't describe, I give you a detailed map, and you pick and choose off the map.
Right.
I look over here. I look at this thing. What is this? I look inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if that, in that situation, it's more fair to be like, well, no one checked under
the
bed.
No one checked the bed. And there's clearly a bed drawn on the map.
There's clearly a bed in this room, and nobody checked under the bed. So I don't feel like it's unfair that when you guys turned to leave the room, someone jumped out and bonked one of you.
Yeah. Well said. So, I mean, that's kind of like a storytelling device, right? Which is our next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, storytelling, using descriptions as storytelling devices.
Yeah.
Right? The haunted house, you know, look for the killer in the house. Mm-hmm. And, like, you describe that, oh, it's a big king-size bed that's up on a frame.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
And then you describe some other stuff in the room.
Right? Like, the closet's slightly ajar.
Yeah.
Right? And so what you're doing is calling attention to all these hiding
spots. To a few different possible leads. Mm-hmm. And so when the players are, like, searching, then you have, like, you have a hand of cards there. You have the bed. You have the closet. You have, you know, a secret panel in the wall. You have stuff that you've presented as possibilities. And if the players are like, we all go look under the bed,
mm-hmm.
well, then it's completely fair to, like, have something jump out of the closet.
Yeah.
Because, but if the players are,
like, I'll take the bed, you take the closet, you take the window
drapes. I'll stand by the door and make sure no one sneaks in behind us. Great. Now they've played their hand against your hand.
Like, I think as a game master, you should be excited that your players, like,
are thinking about
that. Thought of all that.
Because then you're still going to do it. He's still in the closet, like, ready to kill somebody. But it's going to go more poorly for the bad guy.
Mm. And it's still going to be exciting. And, like, the person who chose the closet's going to have, like, a, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Right?
But the payoff is greater because they made
better decisions.
Yeah, they made
good decisions.
They made good decisions that then pay off.
Yeah.
Because nothing happens unexpectedly that they, you know, chose to ignore or whatever.
Mm. And so, like, zooming out from, like, the haunted house scenario, descriptions also are, like, way to, you know, drop breadcrumbs and, like, clues to, like, you know, good story, like, beats, right? So, like, for example, we've talked about it before, the Brackenwalds.
Mm-hmm. Our big lock-in adventure that we did.
Intensive role-playing over a weekend where we just did that and nothing else, which was fantastic.
Very fun.
We started... the players started with a key,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very ornate key, and, like, we even got a little picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, this key is important, and it fits a certain lock.
It has a random symbol key on it. Yeah, it's not just, you know, a key to a cupboard.
Mm-hmm.
It has a thing on it.
Right? So,
maybe look
for
thing.
Something. Yeah.
Look for a thing,
it's a clue
that matches it. And in that situation, you know, there's jokes about, like, you know, players being like, well, I perception check. And that's kind of a dumb way to run the game. You should just, like, you should share with your players everything that there is.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that there is to notice without a roll. And then if they want to, like, look deeper or something is hidden, then there's, like, roles associated with that. But it kind of gets around that where, like, you had a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
That you were looking for. You had a breadcrumb to follow. You had an idea of what to look for. And so it was never unreasonable if you were in a place to be like, all right, I take a beat and I look, does anything mm-hmm. match this?
Right.
That's a completely reasonable and also what I want. You know, mm-hmm. when I give something like that to my players, that's what I want them to do. I might give it to you for free if you, you know, just walk into the right place. But, like, there also might be, it might be a little bit hidden, and I appreciate when players take the thing that you've given them And they're like, I keep an eye out for it.
Right. And like that can be done. And I just want to gush a little bit about good role playing that I did was like my character who had that key. Like every time they were on watch, they were playing with it.
Yeah. Thinking right? about you it. Know,
making sure that one, all my other players
are still right? thinking about the key.
Right. Not their characters unless, you know, they woke up and saw me playing with the key. But all the other players are like, yes, we have a key. Keep an eye out. Mm-hmm. And like
everybody. It has a symbol on it. It probably goes to something. Mm-hmm. Let's keep an eye out for that.
Right. And it reminds the game masters, like, my character is thinking about the key. So like they will not miss something that's obviously, you know, the lock that, you know, the key goes to. Right. So, because it's easy to be like, oh, well, you didn't look at the key lock or you didn't look at the door lock and it matched the key. So, like, you leave the room thinking that that's not where the key goes. But, like, but Game Master, I've been playing with the key every night. Mm-hmm. I would recognize. Mm-hmm. Right. So, it's a way to use the description to, like,
you've almost a story. You've built a case as a player. Mm-hmm. You've built a case to be like, well, if it was there, I would recognize it.
Yeah.
And then a reasonable game master ought to be like, you know what? You're right. No role for this. You're very familiar with this. Mm-hmm. And when it was there in the room, you would have seen it.
Yeah. Because when you, describe, so like, you know, imagine that for somehow we got desynced and like that wasn't clear that I was playing with the key every night or whatever. And you describe this like very ornate door, right? That is a clue or a indication to your players that like this door is important, mm-hmm. right? So maybe it's worth a close look.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just a wood door. Right? It's special.
Yeah.
Now
we're talking about it, I wish I'd actually presented that a little bit mm-hmm. differently. Like, when you guys were in the area where you did find the door that key went to,
yeah.
there should have been more doors. Like, every door should have had that symbol on it, uh-huh. but some of them were just, like, broken or ajar. Yeah. And, like, the skeleton key that you have would have mm-hmm. worked on all of them, but you open it and, like, oh, this is just a cupboard.
Ruins.
Right.
Right.
But then when you find the one where, like, the gemstones are lit up, you're like, this is the one that actually goes through. And a little bit of just like, you know, set dressing leading up to that moment. Mm-hmm. That like, this is the place this key comes from for sure.
Right.
But we're looking for the magic door that leads to the hidden place.
Right. And it works the opposite way. If you don't have the key and you find the door first, mm-hmm. then you're looking out for a key that fits that door.
Right. If there's a symbol that you've described a clear thing, and this is a great way to, you know, a great opportunity to like give a note card with a little drawing on it.
Yeah.
So that players can like handle it and pass it around. And then it's almost like a tactile version of the role playing. You know, you can twirl the note card in your hands. Yeah. And that's like my character is when they're on watch, they're, mm-hmm. you know, they're always getting it out and fiddling with it.
Are we just basically describing Chekhov's gun? That's the,
a little bit. Yeah, kind of as the storytelling device. I mean, like if there's a gun, you know, on the table or on the wall in the first act, someone ought to use that gun.
Right. And like the camera spends a specific amount of frames like looking at that, you know, its importance mm-hmm. and to watch out for it. So, descriptions can be a storytelling device, right? They highlight the important things. They leave little breadcrumbs and clues. Now, on the other side of that, sometimes describing something in detail is just fucking cool.
Yeah.
And it's like something that you as the game master think is really cool. So you're going to spend mm-hmm. 2 minutes describing this thing that isn't actually that important.
Yeah.
But like you just think it's cool.
And sometimes this is the thing I think that gets lost with like visual representation. If you're doing like a VTT or, you know, a physical battle mat on the tabletop, if you're using miniatures or whatever, and you like plop a guy down and it's a really cool bad guy, this miniature, well, not everyone is necessarily going to be looking at the miniature with the same, mm-hmm. you know, artistic eye as whoever sculpted the miniature. Or if you painted it, you probably spent a lot of time looking at it, right? But not everyone else is looking at it the same way. There's greater value, I feel like, in the description if there's like a cool bad guy or a you know, a really interesting door, it's I think it's better and more evocative that you have a strong description of it rather than a visual representation, because you can represent a door with just like a sticky note on a
on a
battle map,
or like a rectangle on the wall line,
right,
or whatever,
little rectangle on the line that represents the wall, right. And so you know what functionally, mechanically, oh, it's a door, but description is what is going to give that meaning. And even good tabletop terrain and miniatures can end up falling flat because maybe the visual aspect of it is not what they're paying attention to.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, yeah, like, describing something in detail because it's cool is a way to, you know, be evocative and, like, not only sink the drift, but, like, create the atmosphere of the drift.
Put a little focus on a thing, even if that thing is maybe not even, like, interactive. You know, you're just trying to describe the scene and the style,
yeah, and the tone.
You're trying to get tone across. You can do that with more detailed description.
Mm-hmm.
More detailed description, higher resolution description doesn't necessarily mean like more interactivity. Sometimes it's just for the purpose of slowing down and imagining things in a little bit more detail and getting everyone a little bit more synced and on the same page about what we're imagining together.
Right. And if you want to hear more on that, we do a whole episode on that, our like style and tone and maybe a little bit of substance. Right. So like it doesn't have to be functional.
Right.
Like we just spent a long time talking about like descriptions are used to make decisions. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just used to like set the atmosphere, give some style, like tell to you your
a,
inner.
Just tell you a little bit of something about like what the game master was thinking when they came up with the thing. An example I like from the Brackenwald adventure is there was these dragon knights, and just like to make it clear that they were a little bit different from other guys that you'd met, I spent a little bit more time on their description, and he had a sword that didn't have a point; it had like a two forked point because it was a dragon's tongue sword. That was his thing, and I thought that was cool. When I thought about that, I wanted to make sure that I hit that in the description, so that it was in y'all's mind that like these are dragon guys, dragon stuff is their thing, and
right. And like we didn't pick up the sword.
No, you don't need to. It wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't like a critical thing. You could have taken it if you wanted. It would have just been a sword.
But it was just a way to get our
help visualize
our mind palace thinking about like the style.
Yeah, have everyone's brains pointing in the same direction.
And like this can be a way for players to get on the action too.
Yeah.
Of like describing their character and like describing, you know, the sometimes you're like, oh yeah, you're looking for a shield. This guy had a shield that you killed, you pick up the shield, you tell me what it looks like.
Yeah, you give me a little bit of, you know. Or you're like, yeah, you killed some bad guys, you're looting their camp. Well, I wanted a thing. And okay, it's perfectly reasonable for whatever like shield or weapon that you were looking for. I'm not gonna give you like a crazy extra bonus for
it. Sure.
But if you wanna swap your, you know, if you wanna swap your basic thing that you already have for another thing with no like significant mechanical bonus. Yeah, you tell me what you find. Tell me what you were looking for. And like, oh yeah, you got a cool hammer.
Mm-hmm.
You got a war hammer now. What does it look like?
And that's
because it can look like whatever you want it to and still be mechanically the same.
And it's a great way to sync, right? Because like, you know, the player's like, okay, well, this is what I think. Excuse me. This is what I think it looks like. And like you as the game master is like, okay, that's pretty good. Doesn't quite fit with like the guys you killed. So like, here's yes and.
Yeah.
And then, like, now you guys are on the same
page. It's like
you're
imagining it's a big, like, two-handed thing. We're like, but that's not what they would have had. But if you want, like, this decoration and you want it to look this cool way, absolutely. Right. Why not?
Because you created it together. You both now know exactly what that looks like and, like, will know what the next thing looks like.
Yeah.
Right.
And so when I describe another combat encounter and you use your cool hammer, we're both going to know exactly like what's happening. We're gonna know exactly what it looks like when you swing that at someone's head.
I'm excited.
Yeah,
I'm excited to go describe something.
Okay, we got anything else before we recap?
I think it's recap time. Yeah.
All right. The function of descriptions. Why it's important for game masters to describe stuff and be deliberate in their descriptions. One, it sinks the drift. We talked about that. We joked about, well, it comes from a movie.
Mm-hmm.
We do still advocate that you watch Pacific Rim because it kind of might be a perfect movie. But we also have kind of co-opted that term to illustrate what we mean when we talk about a shared imagination experience. We talked about decision making, how description informs decision making, and poor or asynchronous description can lead to players having their characters do something that doesn't make sense to you, or, you know, makes sense to them, doesn't make sense to everybody else. And when there is discrepancy there, you got to clarify so that everyone is, you know, moving forward in the with the same things in mind, and also not to punish. We talked about that.
Yeah.
We talked about don't punish somebody for describing an action in character based on a
misunderstanding
of, about, like, a description.
Yeah.
We talked about the idea of vague to detailed, how you don't need to go into super detail on everything. And you can use that to kind of guide your players to what is and is not important in a situation, and how when players decide what they're going to look at or go for, you need to up the resolution on your description. You need to go from vague to more detailed. And then we talked about description as just a storytelling thing, how it can be... you know, critical to the storytelling of an adventure, or sometimes more elaborate, colorful, evocative description is just for the sake of coolness, because there is a cool thing and you want to make sure everyone is seeing the same thing that you're describing, but how that also serves the function of helping sink the drift and get everyone on the same page about stuff. Yo.
Good recap. So I think that's going to do it for this episode of Two-Headed Game Master.
Check out our Patreon,
where it's free. You can just become a member for free at Patreon. We moved all our, like, materials and downloadables to Patreon. We have a tip jar set up if you want to throw us some bucks.
Mm-hmm. But joining the 2HGM community through Patreon is just completely free now. And that is now also the only, like, social or web presence thing. We're going to let the website lapse and just, we're going to hang out there, and that's what we're going to use to share stuff and interact and engage with anyone who's interested in the show. Discord stuff, you can message us through that. You want to suggest an episode or talk about something, that's place to do it. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the intro and outro to, or for Pontella's Finest, the intro and outro to our song. Our
song.
Yoi. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pontella's Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.